Hi, everybody. My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. And I was making a joke earlier before we started this, and I said, oh, a couple of years ago, if I was doing this, you know, how is AA affected and how is your family recovering in an AA, I could just tell you this glorious story. But life is a little more real right now, and so I'm going to tell you how it is now and how we kind of got there. And I'm going to start off by saying that I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1977, and my youngest son came in 1983. So there's not a lot of difference there. We're just 6 years apart in sobriety. And but what happened is that I am also a grateful member of Al-Anon, and so I'm going to throw that part in too, because I truly believe that if it were not for the rooms of Al-Anon, I wouldn't be sober today. And the reason being is I had these two sons. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, a very abusive parent, so I really messed up kids. And I got sober, and I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict, and my oldest son was having a lot of psychiatric problems, and he was cutting on himself and trying to commit suicide every other day. And I mean, it was just, these two boys were just devastating me. And by the time I was 5 years sober, it was really bad. My youngest son was running the beaches of Venice, and all of these beautiful, you know, people were coming to our door, you know, is James here? You know, and then my oldest son ended up putting, the final crux of it was my daughter-in-law called me, and my oldest son had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I'm like, I don't know if I can stay sober through all this. And I ended up going to an AA meeting, and I had just gotten the call from my daughter-in-law. And I know none of you have done this, because I'm one of these people in AA that I believe you take the mess to your sponsor and the solution to the meeting. But I had just gotten this information, and I walked into this meeting out in the San Fernando Valley, and I was just so torn down. I was a hysterical wreck. And so I kind of just blurted all this out. And this old guy in the back of the room, he goes, well, you just need to turn those boys over. You know, and I'm sure there's no crosstalk in your meeting either, but there wasn't that one. And so he says, you just need to turn those boys over. And I just flew out of that chair. And I said, well, you want to tell me how to do that? And, of course, he didn't know. And so what happened was, is I believe that God works whenever we need him. He sends somebody. He shows up. And that day, this woman walked up to me, and she said, I need to take you to an Al-Anon meeting. And I went with her the next day to an Al-Anon meeting. And, I mean, I was just torn down. I was in so much pain. And these ladies surrounded me and put their arms around me, and they said, we know you love your son. We know how you feel. Of course you feel this way. What we're going to show you how to do is to love your sons without it killing you. And I believe today I'm sober, because I was this close. I was in so much pain. So I believe that Al-Anon has saved me many, many times through my relationships with my family. When I was 3 years sober, Dave and I got married. Of course, neither one of us knew how to have a marriage. Both of us knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a marriage. I'm Dave's fourth wife. So, and as our Al-Anon friend likes to say to Dave, you know, you're the only common thread in all those marriages. I was married for 22 years, so I suffer really well. And we had, between us, four kids. And as all of them have had enormous problems coming from parents like us. That's what happens with kids who come from alcoholic parents. And our kids were really messed up. And Dave and I have, we've had a lot of growing. I mean, you want to put some stress in a marriage, put some stepkids in it. It's, you know, it's that'll do it every time. And, but this program has helped us so much because it has, and Dave and I, we learned a long time ago from our sponsors in Texas that I have a sponsor and it's not Dave. And he has a sponsor, and it's not me. So both of us have had separate programs. And as Frank Fitzpatrick, who is my first AA sponsor and sponsored by Frank Honeycutt, my first AA sponsor, Frank used to say, plant yourself in AA like two oak trees. Nurture yourself with the steps and the traditions and the concepts. And what will happen is you'll grow strong. And like two oak trees, one day you'll look up and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And somehow I think Dave and I are there, that the stuff we've been through and what this program has brought us through as far as family recovery. And that son is sober now. In fact, today, Michael, our oldest son, died 9 years ago. But when he died, he was 9 years sober. And today, all our kids are sober, and that's the good news. The other three are sober, one about 45 days, and another one 3 years, and another one 28 years. So if you've got kids out there that you're breaking your heart over, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. And so our kids are sober. But this program, as far as family recovery, has brought us through all of this, all of the heartache of our kids. This program has brought Dave and I through bankruptcy, foreclosure, loss of jobs, you know, you name it. Life's in session. And, you know, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it seemed to me, it's kind of like being raised in the Baptist church, and I, you know, what was really said and what I heard were two different things. But what I heard was when I came to AA is that I have this hideous life. I got sober, and now everything is wonderful. Well, that's not my story. And it's like, you know, we got sober, and we've had a beautiful, wonderful life together. Dave and I are crazy in love with each other, which has never changed in 32 years. But life's been in session. Life's been in session. And we have 5 grandchildren that have never seen us drink, and that is an amazing thing. Our first grandchild was born deaf, and again, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because James and Kelly and Dave and I were sitting there saying, my God, you know, how did this happen? And had our fist at God, and like, people have babies all the time, and, you know, they're perfect, and they don't even want them. And we want our baby, and it's born deaf. And, you know, and now I look at Ryan, who's in Rochester Institute of Technology, going to college, and he's a sophomore. And it's amazing. He went to Europe last year with 3 other deaf people for 3 weeks, 3 kids. I mean, it's amazing. This kid is not handicapped in any way, and I thought he was going to have a treacherous life. So AA's been in session the whole time. An amazing God that Dave and I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, both my sons, one of them's divorced. So we got that little thing going on. And now my daughter-in-law has moved to Michigan with my 2 granddaughters, and my son's in California. So now I've got another trip to make in order to see my granddaughters. My son in Chicago, he and his wife are divorcing, and that's been a crack in, you know, in the family. And this is the second Christmas in 22 years that I won't be with my family. And, you know, these are the things that happen. Life's in session. But the deal is that we're all sober. Nobody's drinking right now. We're all sober, and we love God, and we're trying to do the best we can to stay close to Him and perform His works well. And you know what? It's just our journey. And as Bob says, and it's now the way the family is, it's a little more like everybody else's family. And instead of this rosy family that I had at one time. And you know what? But we still all love each other. We're still getting along. There's just been some breaks in with a few of the people, such as my son and their wives. I don't think they love each other, but, you know, the rest of us, and we try not to get involved in all that. But, you know, it works. Just stay in AA. Just stay in Al-Anon, and no matter what comes your way, if we just stay sober, stay close to God, perform His works well, we'll get through it, no matter what it is. Thanks.
Somewhere around 20 years ago, Polly and I were going to Alcoholics Anonymous in Long Beach, California, which was very near where we lived. Actually, it was Seal Beach, California. And there was a lady that came to that meeting, and we met her, and she has been tightly woven into our life ever since, and we love her to death, and her name is Michael.
Hi, my name's Michael, and I'm a female alcoholic. And it's a privilege to be here. Sonia had said this up from the podium about try to be the best example you can because we might be the only copy of a big book someone comes in contact with. And I think that's particularly important around the family. And I know it's really hard around the family to act like a copy of the big book. But, you know, I come from an alcoholic home. In fact, Anna really got to me because my childhood was much like yours, and the three brothers I had were taken out of my life. But this program gave me the ability to love and forgive my mom unconditionally because I learned where she came from, and it was so much worse than where I came from, and mine was pretty appalling. But she was in and out of AA for a lot of years, and she always after a few months would start drinking again. And what that did is that proved to me AA didn't work. The worst thing, though, is she hung around with really sleazy AA men. And there's not only sleazy AA men, there's sleazy AA women. There's people in these rooms that are just taking up space. Usually if you're coming to something like this, you're pretty serious. But in regular AA meetings, there's people that just take up space. They don't care about the traditions. They don't care about the steps. They don't care about anonymity. They just don't care. They're just buying time. And those are the kind of men my mom and I hung out with. But when I was 12 and 13 years old, several of these sleazy AA men made very serious passes at me. And that's what I thought about the men in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just knew I would never come here. And once I took the first three steps. I didn't even know what the first three steps were, and I didn't take a drink till I was 25. And at 31, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I took those first three steps, and I didn't know what they were. I called a prayer line that was affiliated with the church I had tried to recover in, where I ended up having an affair with the one-legged minister and stealing their money. Talk about hopeless when you steal the church's money and you seduce the minister and the wife is so infuriated. You just feel what the book talks about, hopeless. And but I got on my knees and I took those first three steps. And one way of doing the third step for me, it was I got to a telephone, called a prayer line that was affiliated with the church I'd been in. And I asked them to pray for me because in my mind I thought if God wouldn't listen to my prayers because of what I'd done to the church, maybe God would listen to their prayers. And they prayed for me for 30 days, and within 30 days, I was sober. And it's just a series of God coincidences. I was so sick going into DTs. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was trying so hard not to drink. I went over to my mom's. Who's drinking? It makes no sense. But her time in AA, she was very sensitive and compassionate about my trying to quit. And I just felt safe over there. The mayor of Signal Hill was driving past her house, and he remembered her from when she was in AA. And he just stopped. I don't know where he just stopped to try and talk my mom into going to a meeting. And she didn't want to go. She didn't want to be sober. And I was just at that place where I would have done anything. And so he talked me into going. And I went to that meeting with him on a Saturday night. He and another old-timer had me wait in the parking lot, and they went across the street and bought two beers and made me drink those before the meeting. I was thinking, AA is not too bad, hey? No, it did just what they needed it to do. It just settled me down where I could hear something because I was so sick. And I heard exactly what I needed to hear in that meeting. This girl shared that she didn't drink till later on in life. She practiced her disease of alcoholism way before she ever took that first drink, and she did it in the form of compulsive overeating and amphetamine abuse. I've never heard anything like that in a meeting since then. But the one thing she said, and this is the real reason why I stayed, she said her whole life growing up, some kids wanted to be doctors, some kids wanted to be lawyers. And all she ever wanted to do when she grew up was just not to be an alcoholic like her mom. And I cried throughout the rest of the meeting, and that's the first time I ever felt like I belonged anywhere on this planet. And I couldn't get to a meeting for the next week because I was so sick, but I didn't drink. And you know that it had to be God. Anyway, so sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to be an example. 3 months after I got sober, my mom came in to AA again, and she got 4 years of sobriety. And that was the best years I've had with my mom. But she had to do other things. She didn't get a sponsor. She didn't do the steps. She went to cable producing school instead and became the second cable producer in the Long Beach, California area. Got a lot of notoriety. She was doing a wonderful show. She won awards. And the name of the show was High on Life, and it was all about sobriety. And she's hanging out with all these other producers now. They're drinkers, and she starts drinking again, and she's doing this High on Life. I was just not happy about it. You know, I just felt like, what a hypocrite. I judged her so harshly. And because of my mouthy judgment, she changed the name of her story, the name of her show to Senior City. And it was hysterical. It was very funny. She did such a great job. But so my mom's drinking. Her life is pretty successful. She's got notoriety in Long Beach, but she comes down with cancer. And she's dying of cancer. But she is such a character. You know, she just has this wild imagination. And she told my sister and I that she wanted to have her funeral before she died. So my sister and I got this thing together, and we called it the Awake Wake. And the caterers notified the newspaper, and I mean, it's a big newspaper like Los Angeles Times. They notified the newspaper, and the newspaper, all of a sudden, during this party, photographers showed up and newspaper writers showed up. I was just in shock over the whole thing. And my mom walks around to all of her friends and she's singing, "It's my party, I'll die if I want to." And you would too if it happened to you. And she was just so adorable. They put all of that in the newspaper article. And so the next day I get up and here I look at the newspaper and it's on the front page. This huge picture, an article about my mom who's drinking. She's drinking and on morphine. And I just don't think that's right, and I just don't understand God, you know. So anyway, the Associated Press picked it up. So it went all over the United States. So now we have all these talk shows calling us, trying to get us on their talk shows before my mom dies. And the one she really wanted to do is the Maury Povich show. And they like a lot of drama, you know. So I got a call. I was at work, and they wanted me to come on the show with her and my daughter. I didn't want to go on that show. I didn't want to get on an airplane, and I didn't want to fly to New York, and I didn't want to be on TV. But it was my mom's last dying wish. My sister really wanted to go, but she's normal. They didn't want normal. They knew. I don't know how they found out so much about us, but anyway, so we went on the Maury Povich show, and my mom's on morphine, and she's drunk, and she's just, I just don't see how she's going to do the show. And the producer comes up to me and he said, "Your daughter is so shy and your mom's a nut. You're going to have to carry this and you're going to have to not let there be one moment of of empty space where you, he said, anytime it gets quiet, you say something. And I, another resentment. So anyway, the show went wonderful. You put a camera on my mom and she's unbelievable. I never knew these things about her until just before she died. And she got on the stage, I mean on the show, she sang, she got up and she sang, "It's My Party, I'll Die If I Want To." And it was picked up by, a book was written and they used that in the book. A movie came out afterwards called "It's My Party, I'll Die If I Want To." But NBC or CBS contacted us and they wanted to do a movie about my mom's life. And they wrote a treatment for it. And in the treatment they made my sister and I enemies and we couldn't go for it. And they had Carol Burnett playing the lead part. And her writers got together and they rewrote the treatment. Anything, they went back and forth, and my mom died, and it kind of fizzled out, which is really good. But all this time, I can't understand. My mom's having a ball. She's dying, but she had the best time of her life. And she said that on Maury Povich's show. She said, "I'm having the time of my life." And I know today that was one of the greatest gifts God has given me. Because I have this show on tape, and the four of us girls are together. They interviewed my sister in the audience, my mom and my daughter and I. And I didn't know it was for me, but I really feel like, oh, that was for me. Sorry. Anyway, my daughter is sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had a few bouts, so she got drank again after her kidnap. And she was in and out, but she finally got sober. And she has 20 years of sobriety right now. But she's dying of liver disease from diabetes. It's not from drinking, it's from diabetes. But she has been with me 3 years longer than she was supposed to be. We had hospice come in, and she was so bad, but somehow her liver enzymes went up a little bit, and hospice released her, and she's been with me for 3 years since then. So she's bedridden. I don't know what's going to happen to her, but my husband and I had to take my granddaughter in, and she's a joy. She's such a joy, and she had such a hard life. She wasn't going to school because she was afraid she'd have to come home and find her mom dead. She used to have to breathe air into her because she had terrible seizures, but she has come along. We have her in a prep school. She's on varsity basketball. My husband's son died in March. He was 49. My husband was 49 when he got sober. And his son was an alcoholic who died at the age of 49. It was a tragic accident. And we have two grandsons from his marriage. So now we've got three grandchildren that we're having to try to be a copy of the big book because my husband's angry. He's very angry. He's angry that his son died. He's angry because the boys are drinking, 15 years old and 18 years old. In the will, the house was left to them, but they don't understand the house wasn't paid for. You know, he didn't plan on dying then. And they both want to stay there. They're just, it's really, it's just my husband hasn't had a chance to grieve. And but he's trying really hard right now to just be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you can't be that angry and yelling and screaming and expect your kids to want to come to AA. Another thing I found out about Alcoholics Anonymous that has not been that great of an example is I am really busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I do. That's my life. And to some people in my family, that didn't look appealing. It looked like I had no life. They just don't understand what it's like. And so I had one brother who refused to even talk about AA. He wouldn't let me see his children anymore that I had took the two girls all the time. Anyway, he dropped dead at the age of 47 from this disease. His brother went into the hospital at the same time, his twin brother, with cirrhosis of the liver. And I was able to get to see him, you know, before he supposedly was going to die. But he didn't die, and he's sober today. But he doesn't go to AA. He doesn't want people in the little town of Leadville, Colorado, to know that he's an alcoholic. But in the big book, it says there you can, at certain stages, quit on your own. It does say that. And that's what my brother did. He quit on his own. But I'm telling you, I would not want his sobriety. He's pretty miserable. He's pretty darn miserable. My other brother, my third brother, after Barry died, came to Georgia to stay with my husband and I. He just wanted to get sober because he knew that he wasn't going to make it if he didn't get sober. So today he's sober, I don't know, 16 years, something like that. And so sobriety slowly is trickling down. My husband's other son came to AA, and he would have 20 years of sobriety if you call drinking near beer sobriety. But his life is working, so I judge no man. I do not judge him. And that's pretty much how this program has affected our family. But the amazing thing is this program has kept my husband and I together for 17 years, and these were the hardest years of our lives. We both have age on us with our aches and pains and having many surgeries. And my husband right now, he's not here because he fell and shattered his shoulder. He had to have a shoulder replacement. He's about 3 weeks into recovery. All those things, we've stayed together through it. We've been able to love each other through it. And I just can't believe I've had the ability not to take things personal. You know, I know when he's angry, it's not about me. And I can just sit him down and put my arms around him and tell him it's going to be okay. That's what he used to do to me when I was having my back surgeries. And it's just this beautiful program that allows us to live together under all these conditions. Life has been hard for us the last 17 years, but it's the best 17 years of my life. I mean, what this program has done for me is beyond my wildest dreams. And unless you stay here long enough to experience the highs and the lows, you don't really understand what we're talking about. But all I can tell you, if Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't fun, if I wasn't happy, I wouldn't be here 32 years. Thank you.
And our next person that's going to share is a spiffy young lady from Louisville, Kentucky, and I will let her tell you about her. She's pretty special. Anna?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anna, and we're supposed to be sharing on how this fellowship has affected our family relationships. I will start with how my life was in Ukraine. I grew up with two alcoholic parents and an alcoholic grandfather who lived very close to us. My parents, we rarely saw our parents, so we more or less had no relationship with them. We had no relationship with our grandfather. We saw him from time to time whenever he was drunk, but we were never with him. We never hung out with them. The only time we went to their house was just to visit my grandmother, and that wasn't very often. My parents were unfortunate and were not able to recover. As far as I knew, when I was there, they were very active alcoholics, and their children, we were not able to voice how we felt to them because they were never there, and we were never able to ask for what we needed, which was their love and affection. Coming to America was a totally different experience for me. My adoptive parents were, in fact, in the program before they adopted me. In fact, my adoptive dad got sober the year before I was born. So I believe that was God's timing, that he was preparing the three of us to be a family. After I came from America, I started attending ALA teen meetings. Probably 2-3 weeks after I came to America, I could not speak English. Let's just say that was a very interesting meeting for a while. I had no concept why I was there or what was going on. It took me quite a while to learn English and for me to start understanding what the program was about. And I will say that I was very fortunate to have a mother that had been an Alateen sponsor at the time. So I was not given the choice to attend Alateen meetings, and that was a blessing. And I will say that if given the choice back then, I probably would not have attended. I have people coming up to me and asking me if I had ever wanted the choice of whether to attend meetings or not. And my answer is always, at 8, 9 years old, I was not mature enough to make that kind of a decision, a decision that would affect the rest of my life, more or less. Alateen has been a great help in our family. We are able to communicate more clearly. We still have some communication glitches every now and then. But I am able to tell them how I feel, and we can talk calmly about things now that I would used to get angry about, and because that was my reaction. And now I can ask for what I need. If I feel lonely, I can go and talk to Mom or ask for a hug, if that is what I need. And I would not have been able to do that if it was not for this program. Another important thing that my mom talked about earlier was that we ask each other for forgiveness if we need to make amends, because that's very important. I have a hard time sometimes holding resentments, and funny story. When we first started doing this, it wasn't long after I came to America. It took me a very, very long time after a disagreement with my parents to finally make amends, because I thought I was right and they were wrong. It turns out it doesn't matter if someone was wrong or right. It's the relationship that matters. And if I needed to make an amends, I taught myself not to make amends until I was sure that I meant it, because otherwise there's no point of making the amends. Another important lesson I learned that has helped with my relationship with my family is that if I am going to make an amends, I need to make an effort to change how I am acting, because that is, says that I'm sorry for what I did, and it shows that I actually care about what I am saying. Program, has been a lifesaver for us. When I started going through a hard time with depression, and I started withdrawing, and I didn't really use my program. I didn't use the people in the program. That was probably more hurtful than anything else that I had done. I still attended Alateen meetings, but I stopped using the tools that I was giving. When I started recovering from that from the depression, I started to once again use my Alateen tools, and I started once again to be able to ask for what I need, and that helped so much. That's pretty much in a nutshell. I know that wasn't very long, but that's pretty much in a nutshell how this program has helped me with my family members. And one more thing before I go, I will say that, people come up to me and ask me if they should make their children attend Alateen. And I would say yes, because would you have, if you think about it, would you have wanted to attend a program like this when you were young, if given the choice? And as you get older, you realize the effect it has on all your relationships. So I would strongly suggest that you consider, if you have children or grandchildren, allowing them the opportunity of recovery. Because if it's helped you, how much more could it help your child while they are young? So thank you.
Thank you, Anya. I am a participating member of this panel. I didn't know I was going to get to chair it till I got here. But So I have I got a couple of kids, and one of them is dead. Mike's been dead 10 years now, not nine. Michael and Kim, and they were cursed with a father who was who found it so difficult to live in this world inside himself, inside his own head, that he had no choice. I had no choice but to drink. I didn't plan on drinking. I just went to a high school party at the beach one night and got to drink as much as I wanted to, and changed my life forever. I had no idea there was such freedom available. I could see nothing wrong with it. In fact, I simply could not believe that anything that could make me feel that good could possibly be wrong. So I found out the hard way that alcoholism is just too, the chains of alcoholism, rather, is just too soft to be felt until they're too hard to be broken. So by the time I began to get some glimmer of what kind of trouble I was in, I was already married, and I had a couple of kids, and I was a miserable, rotten, drunken father. I had a lot of anger. You know, you've seen a million of them. You've heard a million stories. They're all me. You know, I just drank too much, and I got angry easily, and I was critical and judgmental and disapproving, and you know, our people who are stuck with us, people like me, are in a really bad spot because we affect their lives in the most unbelievably bad way. So anyway, I have these two kids, and my first wife, after about 10 years, just simply couldn't take any more. I don't know how she took as much as she did, but she just got to where she just couldn't take any more. So we broke up. And you know, I thought the end of the world had come, because I remember the day I got the Dear John letter. First of all, I was really angry because she didn't have the courage to come and face me and tell me to my face. Well, she was in Texas, and I was in Kentucky, so you know that's. But I was really angry about that. I thought I had, you know, I always thought I was right, and I'd been done a terrible misservice. You know, and I always had this look what they've done to me attitude, and so I was really mad at her. But my very first thought after reading that letter was, who's going to take care of me? I didn't know how to operate in the world anymore. I didn't know how to function. I mean, I was not, I mean, I was totally indifferent to ideas like honesty and integrity. And they just weren't a part of my life. Concepts like that were just not a part of my life. So I got these two kids, and they pretty much go out of my life. I would get angry about all kinds of things. My daughter had an abortion when she was 14, and I didn't find out until much later. You know, and I thought, how can you do this without checking with me first? You know, I just never got it. You know, I mean, I'm not there anymore. So things went along, and finally, by the time I was 40 years old, it all came falling down. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. My life changed so dramatically. I mean, I don't know about anybody else's life in the detail that I know Polly's life, but I know her life and I know my life. And both of us have changed so dramatically, it is sometimes hard to believe. You know, if you can stay in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can, to the best of your ability, fulfill the conditions of this program, and I say that very carefully, to the best of your ability, you have to do it well enough so that you withdraw all the ammunition your head uses to shoot at you with. It has to be at least that good, because otherwise your head is going to keep running that Gatling gun at you. You know, well, you didn't do that. That's not the best fifth step you could do. You didn't put down this and you didn't put down that. If you're doing that, you know, keep coming back. But you're not going to get free with that approach, in my experience. So I get sober. I meet Polly in 1980. We could not be apart any longer. We just simply couldn't. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. There was no way to separate us. We could not be apart any longer. So we left Texas together, married, but not to each other. We gave the AA community in North Central Texas some things to keep their gossip mill going for a while, and we didn't particularly care. She was about 3 years sober, and I was about four, and we went to a town up in Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, where nobody knew us. And nobody knew anything about us, never heard of us before. And it was an idyllic situation for us. We were alone, nobody knew us, and we had a grand first year of our marriage. It was sort of like it was just the two of us in a fairyland. And so nowhere along the line did my kids figure into all this. They didn't particularly care for me. They had no interest in contacting me. They had no interest in being honest with me. We just had nothing. And things just rocked along. And Polly and I moved to California, and we just went on with our lives. And very, very active always in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the centerpiece of our life. So along about 10 years ago, about 12 years ago probably, I began to talk to my son occasionally. I would just call him or he would call me, and we just talk about nothing in particular. And gradually, that just kind of deepened a little bit. My daughter would have nothing to do with me. And finally, one day, my son called me and he said, "Dad, I can't go on anymore. I just can't." And he's taking pills and drinking, bad combination, if you want to stay sane. And so I said, "Well, Michael," he said, "you know, what am I going to do?" And I said, "Michael, you're just going to have to do something to get help, because you're not going to beat this by yourself. You're not. And you know me, you know where I've been the last 20 or so years. I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know what else to tell you. I can't tell you to do something that I haven't done, that I've heard works. I have to tell you to do something that I have done, that I know works. So I know you're probably not terribly thrilled to hear about that, but that's the best information I have for you." So he called me later, and he said he had found an outpatient program, and that he was going. It was a sort of an AA-based program. So he came into Alcoholics Anonymous through that program. Well, as soon as he got in here, that outpatient program ran a series of screens on him to see if he had anything seriously wrong, if he had any serious diseases or problems. And he found out he was HIV positive. Now, you know, that can really trash your life, finding that out. But he, and at first he was terrified. He was really scared that he was going to die, and so was I. But after a while, he found a really good doctor who was right up on the front edge of HIV infections and all that. And he lived for 9 years after that, totally asymptomatic. Let me tell you what he did because of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the point I've been leading up to. My son Michael called the Texas AIDS Commission and asked them if they needed volunteers. And they did, and he volunteered for them for 10 years. He would do things like drive people with full-blown AIDS 250 miles from Corpus Christi to Houston just for dental work, because no dentist in Corpus Christi would see them. And there was a dentist in Houston that would, and he would drive them there and back. Everything he did, he found a church that paid particular attention to people with problems like that. Not just that, but problems like that. And he became a volunteer for that church. And that church, what lured him in was that that church fed people who had no other place to go and nothing to eat. And you didn't have to stand in line, and you didn't have to listen to a sermon, and you didn't have to eat watery soup. You got good, hot meals. And when you came there to eat, you were seated and you were served, and your dignity remained intact. And he volunteered for that all the time. He volunteered also for the church, and he and I became very close. And it was really, I got his big book after he died. I got his big book. You know, and you get a peek into somebody's heart if they've been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and have taken it seriously. You get a peek into their heart if you can get their big book. Because you know how we are. You know, routine stuff gets highlighted in yellow. And, you know, if it's a little hotter than that, it gets blue or green. You know, and if your hair's on fire, it gets red. And if you're really screaming, it gets red and underlined in red. So I can look at his big book and tell what really touched him. And I know he got it. Man, he really got it. All the right stuff has been underlined and emphasized. There are questions that he has written to himself out in the margins. And they're the right kinds of questions, you know, like, am I this way? And he'd have something underlined in red, you know. And so he was a good guy. My daughter, meanwhile, had not quite gotten ready to abandon larceny and drug and alcohol abuse. So she continued on the path. And she was such a committed liar. I wish there were a softer word, because it just sounds harsh when you say it, like, you know, and emphasize. I wish she had a little more honesty, a little more willingness to tell the truth, or did then. But she just didn't. And I understand why, you know. I understand why. And I take most of the responsibility for that. You know, you don't go tell Daddy anything if you're going to be judged, and if he's going to look bad at you, you know, and accuse you, and I think worst of all, show his disappointment in the way you're living. But I was just too stupid to know that. So finally, I didn't know what was going to happen to her. You know, I mean, she had some exciting adventures in her life, let me tell you. But, you know, I mean, you just can't make stuff like that up. But, you know, she was married for a while to a guy that was heir to the Tandy fortune, one of the heirs to the Tandy fortune. So they would ride around in limos, doing coke and buying it for the limo full of people that were their friends and all of that. And finally, her husband used up all the trust fund and it was all over. Rats. she was married for a guy to a guy for a while that was just absolutely wonderful. He was a really good man. He wasn't wealthy or anything, but he was a really good guy until the law enforcement officials from Colorado showed up and wanted to talk to him about leaving the state without getting permission from his probation officer. Oops. Oh, well, it's okay because they weren't really married anyway. So, you know, and these kind of horror stories, I mean, I don't know what to do. You know, I just don't know what to do. And so finally, not long ago, she called me and she said, "Dad, I don't know anybody to turn to but you. And I have to quit drinking. I have to. You know, I'm just dying." And so she has quit drinking. She's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She has a job. I wish it were not so personal. I'd tell you about the latest guy she married and is now gone. But, I mean, it's a story that will just absolutely drop you to the floor in disbelief. But so that's where they came from. And that's what I did to them. And they have recovered. And it is through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that our family has been brought back together. You know, this is a place where you come when you're a drunk that lives under the bridge. This is not a place where you come to learn how to be a good husband or a good father. You know, especially when you just don't get it to begin with. And right now, what you have given me personally is sober children, a wife that I have been successfully married to for a long time. I didn't know what soulmate really meant till she came into my life. And I don't know how you would ever drive us apart. And I'm not that easy to be married to. I'm really not. You know, I have a lot of bad habits. I have some things that go on in my head that I don't know that I'll ever be able to unlearn. I'd like to. I've been trying to, but I don't know that I ever will. And I just have to, you know, I just have made my peace with God in this way. I have just said, "God, I want you to show me how to live my life in such a way that anytime you think of me, you will spontaneously smile." Is that a big order? Well, yeah. You know, I'm not shooting for mediocrity. You know, yeah, it's a big order. But that's what I'd like. And I'll get as perfect as God wants me to be. I'll be the person He wants me to be. I really cooperate with Him to the fullest extent of my ability. And so while I was going through all this with my own children, a lot happened to me. I have 8 or 9 young women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, all but one. I got her at church, but I have 8, 9 young women who have asked me if I would be their father. I didn't ask any one of them to let me be their father. They asked me if I would be. And that is extremely healing. I can't tell you how much I thank you for changing me to the extent that anything like that could happen. They all call me Daddy. I didn't ask any of them to call me Daddy. I didn't tell them what to call me. They can call me anything they want to. They can call me Bozo if they want to. I don't care. And so I have achieved something with God's help and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't think was possible for me. It's never going to happen for me. And that is I have some girls that really love me. And I'll tell you flat out, I adore them. Every last one of them. They have never made me mad. I never judge them. They've never even annoyed me, not one of them. You know, finally, I learned how to be a decent father. And so that's kind of my experience, and we're out of time anyway. But I wanted to say one last thing about my grandson, Ryan, who was deaf. When he and his buddies were going to Europe, it's all over Facebook that they're just going to Switzerland. And I called him up and I said, "That's for Mom, right?" He said, "Yeah." I'm sorry, I emailed him. Sent him a text. If you don't text, you don't speak to your children or grandchildren. I mean, you know. I have to send him a text and say, "I'm going to call you. I need to really talk to you, so answer the phone." Otherwise, they won't answer. So he let me know, yeah, that Switzerland stuff is only for Mom. They're going to Germany and Amsterdam and France. They're going over there and drink beer and have a good time. What the hell would you do if you were 19 going to Europe for the first time with your buddies? I know what I do. I know what I did. Not going to Switzerland, I'll guarantee you. So he was really great. Yeah, it's just for Mom. So we have an intact family. And if your family is not as intact or as kind and loving and as generous and as giving, first of all, my first thing I really learned is let them be kids. Khalil Gibran wrote something about children, and I don't think I can quote it, but one of the statements in there was, "Your children are from you, they are not of you." And so turn them loose, hope for the best. You were turned loose, look where you went, and look where you are now. You know, am I worried about them? Nah. They're God's kids. They're not mine. My job is to love them and take care of them, help answer their questions if they have any, and send them stuff for Christmas and birthdays. Just make sure they know that I love them. And so thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of those that are in here that have helped me become that person. And it's every one of you, just by your example. Because that's what you got to do. That's the only thing you have. It's the only influence you have over your kids, how you live, your own example. If you're mean and nasty and dishonest, that's the way they'll be, at least when they're with you. So that is the end of our program for this panel. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. I have one thing that I've been asked to announce, and that is all of you who are here as registered members of this conference, you get a 20% discount on most of the stuff that's for sale in the hotel. So if you want to go down and buy something, check on that. Okay.